Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Common Good Podcast. It's Politics Day, even though it's a Wednesday. Usually we do that on a Tuesday, but it's Wednesday. We're going to talk politics anyway because there's a lot going on in the world of politics. I'm Dan Dietrich. We've got Doug Padgett and Rob Ryersey with us. And guys, I don't even know if we have time to talk about the weather. There's so much in the world of politics going on.
65 degrees in Minneapolis yesterday on March, middle of March. 65 degrees, yeah.
77 sunny here in Arkansas today.
It's actually kind of cold here in Michigan, which, you know, feels normal.
Yeah. So. Hottest winter so far in across the United States of America on the continental United States.
And it's not great. Not a great sign. Laughing because I'm terrified.
Hey, if you feel like you're listening to three guys that are a little tired, that's because for the last 12 living in our second home, which is the Faith, Hope, and Love, Supporting Democracy for All vehicle, and traveling Arizona and California and around and talking a lot. So good to be back in the safe confines of our snuggly little homes. And those of you who've missed us, sorry that we haven't been around on a regular schedule, but I hope you've been keeping up on our YouTube channel. It's been full of things. Speaking of full of things, man, yesterday in presidential politics, big day. Last night, it was confirmed that Joe Biden has enough delegates now that if there was a delegate fight, he has the requisite amount committed to him. So does Donald Trump, both of them. So here we go again. Almost 4 years to the day, I think. I would imagine it was 4 years ago about now when Joe Biden wrapped up the nomination in the contested primary. At least I think so. So four years and here we go again. You know what it's like? It reminds me of like somebody who went to college or was picking their college 4 years ago about this time and then went to college. Then they completed college and now they're picking their graduate program for another four years. It's just stuck in education, you know, cycle of nonsense.
And they have the same two schools to choose from.
That's right.
I wish we were in education and learning something.
But. Yeah, and maybe an oddball third school that is just jumping in. Never dreamed.
Maybe they won't get a real graduate degree and they'll go to Europe or something and get one of those cheap ones that you can pick up over in Germany or London, one of those by getting RFK Jr. All right, so let's stay with that one. RFK Jr.
Oh, my goodness.
Who apparently is just becoming wacky by the day. This fella is now looking at somebody who currently has an other job.
Yes. There's been conversation about who Robert Kennedy Jr. will choose as his running mate. And you know, in addition to this, there's been a lot of flirtation with him and the Libertarian Party, which would get him ballot access in most states, which is a significant challenge when you're running as an independent. Yeah. So, apparently he had conversations with, Rand Paul, who said no. He's had some conversations Andrew Yang, who said no. He had some conversations with Tulsi Gabbard, who said no, who I fully expected to be his running mate.
Oh, interesting.
And now the speculation is two people. One is Aaron Rodgers, former Green Bay Packers quarterback, current New York Jets quarterback, who played four plays last season before blowing out his Achilles and being out. And the other is Jesse the Body Ventura. Former professional wrestler, former governor of Minnesota, Doug's former governor. RFK Jr., certainly not a politician, but comes from a political family, reaching outside of, you know, the conventional political world, bringing in a well-known anti-vaxxer and MVP quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, well-known conspiracy theorist, former professional wrestler Jesse Ventura.
Yeah. Wackadoodle. Now, any word if he's reached out to Robert Downey Jr. so we could have RFK Jr. and Robert Downey Jr. on the ticket? Because junior ticket would be
the junior ticket
for the junior vote. You know, for
the yeah. Apparently,
advantage of this.
KennedyRogers.com has been purchased. Now, that could be, you know, someone cyber squatting, or it could be someone with the Kennedy campaign.
It wasn't you, Rob. You didn't purchase it?
No, I did not. Though I wish I had thought of it. I don't know. Are we not taking this seriously?
No. I'm not taking it seriously, but if you are, taking it as seriously as you possibly can. No, totally. Do you think there's any serious threat? I mean, I think Robert Kennedy, now I've got Robert Downey Jr. in my head. Robert Kennedy Jr. is just showing himself more and more to be someone that people are just not going to take, are not going to take seriously. I mean, are there 10,000 people who might vote for him in each of these states? Yeah, for sure. For sure. Do you think there's any more serious threat than this?
I don't know. I mean, when we've got two presidential candidates there are serious questions about their frailty, their ability to stand up and experience the full weight of this position and how that might crush them physically as they age. RFK Jr. is he's ripped, he's buff.
Didn't he challenge them to a push-up contest or something?
Yeah. I think he takes his shirt off a few times and
if he was running for editor of Men's Health, I would give him the hands down, hands up. Right? Yes, yeah. He's got it. Yeah. But look, as we've said so many times, voting is about how it makes you feel about yourself as a voter. And are there really people for whom they would have voted for either Biden or Trump, but they're just really committed to some third party? Disruptor and just, let's just be clear, a wasted vote. Now, are there people who wouldn't vote for Trump, just weren't going to, but they can't vote for Biden, so they'll vote for Robert Kennedy Jr. or Robert Downey Jr. or Carl's Jr. or anybody, for sure. There are those people. But is it somebody who's it's between Biden and Robert Downey or Robert Kennedy Jr.? And I'm not sure. I don't know. I just think it's this stuff. It was the same way with the other spoilers, as we've talked about, whether that was Nader or it was Jill Stein. These are people who weren't going to vote for the two candidates anyway. Instead of leaving it blank or writing in Mickey Mouse, they picked up somebody. But I just think they're factored in already, in my own view. But because the margins are going to be so tight in a few of the states where it really matters, I guess there's something here. It just seems to me that people not going to vote or sitting it out because of their own impulses has more power than Robert Kennedy Jr. At this point. Now, could he pull some Trump voters away? I don't know. Maybe because he's the new disruptor. Maybe there's 10,000 people scattered across a few states who are like, he's the new version of Trump 2016. Yeah, I guess so.
But and I don't see him pulling a lot of Biden voters away. Like, if you're mad at Biden about his response to Gaza, RFK Jr. isn't your guy either.
Yeah. Like, and if you're one of these, like, William F. Buckley, serious-minded conservatives who, you know, can't imagine voting for Trump, you know, I don't know, Kennedy doesn't have any kind of attraction to those folks. You know, I think he's more likely to to pull away the strongly anti-vax conspiracy theory folks who, as you know, Trump, there was even, I saw an article this last week about how Trump posted something during the State of the Union address about how he should be given credit for the vaccine. And, you know, Trump was just lambasted on Truth Social by his own supporters for really? That. Yeah.
Because all his supporters are anti-vax, the vaccine that he, his administration pushed through.
Speaking of Truth Social.
The arms of people in the set in federal employment.
Yeah. Speaking of Truth Social, the owner of Truth Social, the former president of the United States, is maybe putting Truth Social on the old sales block to help pay for his legal judgments. He met with Elon Musk last week and reportedly asked him to buy Truth Social. Doug, right, if you had the opportunity to buy Truth Social, would you buy Truth Social?
When Trump goes to Elon Musk, is like, hey, Elon, I need money so bad. I don't have a lot to sell you. I could sell you my bug-infested Mar-a-Lago. But the way I've tried to drive Truth Social into the ground, Elon, I think you're the guy to really bury.
Take the reins.
Tesla boot right on the throat of this thing and bury it forever. I mean, nothing would be better than Elon Musk ruining another social media platform, because only Elon Musk could do more damage to a social media platform than Donald J. Trump. So that seems like a great combo. But look, when Trump is out hunting for money like this so publicly and just begging people, it is a serious risk to this country that this guy has the possibility of being a president, or already has in his failing mind all kinds of information about the United States. I heard Michael Cohen in an interview that really startled me. Now, I've never thought highly of Michael Cohen and have never really given too much credence to the things he said. But when he said, his view of Donald Trump is that if he's prosecuted at a federal level, especially, and convicted, that he will take the documents that he still has in his possession or the knowledge he has and fight back to hurt the United States. Michael Cohen's words were, if Donald Trump is hurt by the United States, he will hurt the United States.
Yikes.
That kind of thing had never crossed my dark little mind. And when Trump is going around, not only talking to Elon Musk, but talking to other foreign money sources, it is a really dangerous situation that's going on. And whatever goes on with the CIA or whoever pays attention to communications of former presidents, I hope they are in deep focus on who he's meeting with, who he's talking to, and what is going on. Because when you're facing criminal charges like he is, and you're dead out of money because of the fines that have come to you already, and now your liberty's at risk, it's really, really serious.
Well, and you've proven over and over that you don't actually care about the American people or the Constitution, America in general, that you're willing to do anything for a buck or a bump on social media or whatever. Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and when
he's reading a book written by Pat Riley. No, by who's the guy from Sports Illustrated? Rick Riley. Mm-hmm. Rick Riley has a book called Commander in Cheat, which is chronicles a lifetime of Donald Trump cheating on the golf course. The people he's played against. Trump does a thing where he, you know, he says that he's won 8 club championships. And the way he does it is that when he buys a new golf course or takes over the management, he tells the pro, I'm going to go out and play a round of golf with 3 friends, and it's going to be the first club championship under the Trump ownership. And then he wins by cheating the round and then says, I won the inaugural club championship. That's how he becomes a club champion.
Gosh, that is just the stupidest, saddest, most pathetic thing.
Yeah, just it's a lifetime of this, of just cheating and cheating and cheating. So whether it's cheating on your wife, cheating on your taxes, cheating on the golf course, or cheating on America, this guy is as consistent as they come.
Unbelievable. Completely believable. And, you know, for all of his talk of wanting loyalty from the people around him, Donald Trump has proven over and over and over again that he will show no loyalty to anyone. You know, he will cut anyone to save himself. And we've seen that with individuals. Doug, I think you're spot on that we could see that on a more macro level with him doing that to the United States of America, mm-hmm. You know, which is, you know, a terrifying thought.
Terrifying. Well, also on Presidential Politics yesterday, the special investigator into the handling of classified documents by current president and 2020 victor, Joe Biden, was not only appearing before Congress, but they released the transcript of the five-hour interview with Joe Biden. And the transcript says the opposite of the things that Herr put in his conclusions to the Attorney General.
Yes. The transcript.
Biden on his memory and other things. Look, special counsels have been out of control for so long. And I guess you just hope against hope that whenever one is invoked, people are going to take the highest level of quality and standards, as opposed to some OSHA inspection of a factory where a guy's walking around with a clipboard and just trying to cause trouble. Just is really, really silly.
Yeah, I can't believe you've got anti-OSHA comments, Doug. That's kind of strange. But yeah, fascinating is Eric Swalwell from
Yeah,
I'm going to swallow my coffee.
I just say it real fast and move on with confidence.
Swalwell. Yeah, which I did initially, and then I doubled back. So Eric, congressman from tall, good-looking former presidential candidate, Eric from California, questioned her about a statement that he made that was found in the transcripts. So there's the transcripts, which is the actual interview that he had with Joe Biden. And then there's the report, which is his recitation of the facts, along with some pretty heavily editorializing about Joe Biden. And in the report, he basically characterizes Joe Biden as a kind old man who, is declining in his mental faculties. Can't remember the year that his son died, and you know, all these kinds of things. In the transcript of their actual conversation, Eric Swalwell pointed out to Special Prosecutor Herr that in his conversation with Joe Biden, he actually complimented Joe Biden on his, and this is the direct quote, photographic memory. He was so impressed with Joe Biden's photographic memory that he commented on it. Now, listen, do I think Joe Biden has a photographic memory? No. Do I think Joe Biden's had some mental decline? Absolutely. And I also think that Herr's depiction of Biden in his report was totally partisan, totally unfair. And you know, the transcript shows that, you know, he was trying to, take a hatchet job to Joe Biden's presidency.
Yeah. And look, when a prosecutor puts together a report, special prosecutor, and then has to give it to the Attorney General, it's going to be recommendations to the Attorney General. So it's very insider communication within the Justice Department, which has a certain set of expectations and standards. And also, those reports are going to be released publicly, even though they're not written for public distribution. That's one of the problems in these statutes is, and this was true of the Mueller report, which was totally condemning of the Trump campaign team and Trump administration at the time. But it was written in a way that was insider language, even though they tried to make it public distribution, capable. And so the American people are not well served by this thing we have going on with these special counsels. At least in the Trump cases, we're going to actually have a trial. So we will now insert a third category, not inner Justice Department communication, not public distribution, but a jury trial about the information that was found. That probably gets us closer to public understanding of what went on. And so we just have to acknowledge that these things don't, we're not in a good place in this country when special counsels are put into place. It may serve the Justice Department's decision-making very well, but it doesn't serve the public imagination well. It's just not something that I think any of us should likely feel good about. And hopefully we can, they've changed the special counsel statutes many times in the United States in the Justice Department. Hopefully they'll look at all of these situations and look to change them again. But I'll tell you, even at beyond the presidential level, things are not looking good for Republicans. Republicans are bailing out of Congress at a really high rate. And just yesterday, there was another announcement, this time from Representative Ken Buck, who's like, take this job and shove it, Speaker Johnson. I quit next week. I don't know if you all saw the interview that he did with a reporter standing in the hallway, the way they do those. And the reporter's like, hey, Representative Buck, can you tell us why you're resigning from Congress? He's like, really? You think I have to explain this to you? And he gets real snide. He's like, I mean, we're impeaching a guy for just having a political difference. He's basically quitting Congress over his own party's choice to have impeachment votes about Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who came into Congress in 2010 as a Tea Party leader. Yeah. The Tea Party head, one of the more articulate Tea Party people, is like this current configuration of Congress, and I think maybe speaking more just of Republicans, I don't know, that's who he deals with. He said, I can't abide with them any longer. I'm quitting. And he's quitting like next week. And now they'll be without someone, so now they'll be down to a two-vote majority to pass anything in the House, which is just going to stall out things like Ukraine and all kinds of other spending bills.
Now, the political implications of this are pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Ken Buck holds the seat that he had previously announced he was retiring. So you remember that Lauren Boebert switched congressional districts. She moved from the district that she had been representing to where she was, which she only held onto that seat by, it was less than 600 votes in the last election. And Adam Frisch very likely would have defeated her this time around. So rather than losing, she moved to Ken Buck's district because he's retiring, and she has been running for Congress in that district in a crowded Republican primary where, she certainly has the most name recognition of all of the Republicans running, but hasn't, taken it by storm where she absolutely is the presumptive Republican nominee for that district. It's also a safe Republican seat. Now, what's really interesting about Ken Buck's, the timing of his retirement, it could be that he's just sick of it and he's done and short timers and I'm out of here and all of that. It also could be a political calculation because since Lauren Boebert is currently a congressperson, she cannot run in a special election to fill this seat. So if the Republicans want to have a special election before November to fill this seat to help increase their very slim majority, Lauren Boebert would be ineligible to run in that, which means come November, she would be running against Not November, but come, I think it's August when Colorado has their primaries. She would be running against an incumbent for that seat. And incumbency is like something like 91% of incumbents win, continue to win. You know, they just, incumbency has a huge, gives a huge political advantage. And so she would be running against an incumbent.
Or she can roll the dice and resign herself, right? To run in the special election.
Yeah. It really feels in some ways that Ken Buck is not just, you know, putting the screws to Mike Johnson, but he's also putting the screws to Lauren Boebert on his way out the door, which is really kind of enjoyable to watch.
Kind of love it, yeah.
Yeah, you remember back, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago when phones were first around, you could send videos and people would send those Rickroll videos where you'd be watching something and then all of a sudden it would be that Rick, somebody, that musician.
Rick playing Astley. Astley. Yeah.
Yes.
Never gonna it's give never you gonna- up.
He's just Rick Dan, we just went full on there together. That was awesome.
He's like a boy band. He's just full on Rickrolling both of them right now. You know, he's just got them in a total and then walking out the door, with a wave. I think this is important on, you know, as you say, like it could actually mean that Lauren Boebert's going to resign her seat now, and that'll drop them down to a one vote majority for some period of time until the special election is completed and all the rest of this. It also just shows what a total nightmare it is within the Republican Party. I know for a lot of us, we feel like the Republicans are holding together and all these people are behind Trump, but actually in Georgia yesterday in the primary, after which Nikki Haley had paused her campaign, she still picked up tens of thousands of votes from people in Georgia that were like, I'm with Nikki Haley. I mean, I don't want Donald Trump so bad. So you've got this going on, and then you've got the Trump campaign takeover of the RNC and putting their Trump putting his daughter-in-law in charge, and they fired 60 people who were running the RNC that they thought were not pure enough for their goals. So they are purging. And I think this move for insiders in the Republican system could be a real problem for them. Watching them treat the RNC like their own personal nonprofit that they're going to bilk, like they did when Donald Trump paid for Eric Trump's Cub Scout fees out of his nonprofit organization rather than the $12 it was for his son to be in Cub Scouts when he was a kid. They're going to do the same thing to bilk the RNC to pay all Donald Trump's legal bills and to serve as nothing to be supporting other candidates running for office around the country. And I think a lot of Republicans are going to really have a problem with the new Trump level purity tests. And frankly, it's going to hurt candidates who are running in other races. And if those candidates are in Arizona, Georgia, maybe North Carolina, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, it could put a real damper on Republican enthusiasm and turnout in those districts for people to come out. So the adage, everything Trump dies, everything Trump touches dies, is so true, whether it's casinos or steaks or some fakey little college or, you know, the presidency. His campaign, they're just going to be demolishing the infrastructure that is the Republican National Committee and the Republican Party as a whole.
Yeah, there's the 60 staffers that were fired. It seems like they were fired over loyalty, rather than competence, and you know, there's a particular set of skills. There's institutional knowledge. There's, you know, things that go along with, you know, working for an organization. Any organization that guts 60 staff members loses significant ability to function at a high level until people are brought in who are trained, who are knowledgeable, who are experienced and competent. And so, you know, could they swap out these 60 people with 60 even better people? Sure, that's conceivable.
Theoretically possible.
Yes. It's like, I can think of that as an idea. Is it likely to happen? Not with these people. You know, this is a group of people that have shown like their inability to hire competence. They're like, it is nepotism all over the place, including, you know, right from the top here with Lara Trump, you know, becoming the co-chair of the RNC. And I actually think that this, if I'm a Republican, who maybe voted for Trump in the past, but, you know, isn't a MAGA Republican. If I'm a Republican like that running for office somewhere in the country, this is deeply concerning.
Yeah.
Because what Laura Trump has done is significantly weakened the RNC mere months before Election Day. Like this isn't like December 1st and right. You know, we got through the election and now we're purging. This is right when all of this organizing is taking place, right when all of these people are going to be doing their most important work, and they're shown the door. And it's really hamstringing the Republican Party, which frankly, you know, more power to them, do it, go. But it's just it's crazy watching it from the outside going that, like, there's no way this works. This isn't going to work out well for you.
It's a gift to the Democrats, especially in the long run. Like more the party mechanisms consolidate around Trump, the more fragile the whole thing is for them. Yep. And you're seeing the moderate Republicans run for the doors.
Yep.
Not even the moderates. I mean, when we're calling Ken Buck a moderate, that's really something,
right?
Yeah. It's the non-principled. Just non-Trumpy ones. I mean, I just think it's boiled down to that. He is the new litmus test inside this world, and that's that. And the people that they fired at the RNC. There's 60 people or more, but it includes the people who were doing any kind of outreach and community organizing to non-white communities. Those people are gone. Oh, and my bet is that they're not just firing them only over loyalty, they are, but also to reduce cost.
Yes.
So you can drop 60 people, then not replace them or replace them with 23 people. You've saved a bunch of money, so you can now use that money to pay your lawyers for the fees that you've racked up previous to whatever point the RNC had to stop paying Trump's bills. So my guess is, and this picture you have up here, Dan, on the screen for those watching on the video version, is Lara Trump holding up a check. Is there any way you could zoom in on that check, or do we know what's on that check?
I was trying to do that earlier.
It's a check from Elon to purchase Truth Social.
Yeah. For $126, or is that check to a porn star payoff? I don't know what that check is for. I mean, it could be, right? It could be a check to somebody to keep them quiet about the illicit affair that he had with a adult film worker. I don't know.
Me, did you catch the clip of Ted Lieu, Representative Ted Lieu, asking those questions during the hearing to the special counsel?
No.
It's like, hey, in your investigation, did you uncover any payments to an adult film star? And he's like, nope. Did you uncover? It just goes through this list of crimes that Trump has done. It's just clarifying what crimes you found and didn't find.
I mean, just trolling, right?
Yeah.
Hey, the other big player a lot of people are worried about in all this is presidential politics in the next few months is the influence of China, and specifically through TikTok. So today, I think the House is going to pass a bill that demands that TikTok divest its ownership, divest from the Chinese ownership in some variety. And who knows what's going to happen at the Senate, but it could be that we actually lose people actually lose the ability to access TikTok in the United States because of congressional because of congressional action, which is really rather remarkable to think this. And even if that doesn't happen, which would be, I wouldn't care personally about any of that. But the U.S. intelligence agencies are saying that China has intentions to push the divide in the United States, maybe even beyond just what they're doing with TikTok and, yeah, and how their algorithm is designed to push competing ideas into the population in order to create greater divisions. So, I mean, TikTok could be gone, and the U.S. intelligence agencies are deeply concerned about China's influence in our elections.
Yeah, according to the annual threat assessment report, this is from the article we're referencing here, China's desire is, quote, to sideline critics of China and magnify U.S. societal divisions, end quote. Could spur it to meddle with this year's elections. The 40-page report was originally published in February, just released. China's propaganda arm, the report said, has used TikTok accounts to target candidates from the GOP and Democratic parties during the last midterm elections. It added that China's propaganda actors, quote, increase their capabilities to conduct covert influence operations and disseminate information. So they're... Yeah. They're pretty concerned. And why wouldn't China do this with whatever capabilities and what, whether it's through TikTok or just fake accounts on Facebook? Why not?
Yeah. I look, the United States is involved in all kinds of influence campaigns in other nations. We do that in many ways from this country. China and Russia and other nations do it all around the world as well. But when the U.S. intelligence agencies are going public about these kinds of things, that tends to ratchet up the fear that people have that their actors are really going to be engaged. And I don't know what the Senate's going to do. I mean, I don't know if senators are going to just put their finger in the wind and say, too many people like TikTok and we don't want to anger people who would lose access to TikTok. But TikTok has, the entire time that I've known of it, it's been talked about as something that China is specifically using for its own purposes. And people don't care in the United States, frankly. I mean, they just do not care. They're going to use it anyway and just think the people that follow me, whatever. I mean, people do with TikTok, whatever they do with TikTok, and they're not concerned about, you know, what the ownership of TikTok's real agenda is around all of this. Trump, who used to be against TikTok, is now met this last week with one of the funders or one of the owners of TikTok, and has switched his view and now says you can't get rid of TikTok because it would help Facebook. So so now Republicans who are, the train is going down the track on banning TikTok, now have Trump coming out yesterday saying don't ban TikTok. So that's going to be interesting to see how tight the rope is around the voting hand of a lot of these Congress people to see if they will now change their votes today over what they had committed they were going to do when they were whipping up these bills.
And Biden has said he'll sign a bill if it comes to his desk.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah, it's a real
maybe
thing.
He just assumes it won't get to that, and so it's safe to just say things like that. I don't know what the calculation is there, but
I don't know either. But man, I guess I just think it's a problem. They should probably do something about it. And I don't even know why. I don't use it. I'm an organization. If you're on TikTok, if you use TikTok, be sure to follow Vote Common Good. Because we're just use all the platforms, of course. We even use that one that's been driven into the ground so severely by Elon Musk. We still utilize that one. And we try to be in all the places, of course.
Yeah.
But if TikTok goes away, I don't know. It seems like there'd be a lot of free time for a whole lot of people that, or maybe they just go over to Shorts or Threads.
Threads. I remember when Threads was a thing.
Oh, I'm still on Threads. I'm surprised you're not enjoying it.
Of course you are.
It's great.
I'm on Threads.
Yeah.
It says the Twitter guy.
You would be.
We're getting half. Yeah. We're getting half support from Twitter guy. fair enough.
I'm not a TikTok user. The TikTok users that I know, like, they're not all like 14-year-old girls. TikTok is like super popular, and this just seems like the people that use TikTok that I know love TikTok, swear by it, and I don't know. This just like this seems like such a ridiculous boogeyman to go after in my mind. And maybe there's something there. I don't know. I don't know. But come on.
Yeah, it seems like, to me
there are the way real problems in this country.
Yeah, it seems to me the solution to this isn't to play whack-a-mole with whatever apps we don't like who's running them, but to educate people on how to recognize misinformation when you see it, and you know, put some, we do need some regulations in place about what age you can access these apps. Like there's so many studies saying, for the love of God, please keep children off of Instagram, off of Facebook, off of TikTok, because it is damaging our children. So we do need to have those conversations, but I don't know that this, like banning TikTok over these concerns, is really going to help.
Yeah, I don't think they're banning it because it's bad for kids. I think they're banning it because they believe that it is a Chinese intelligence agency asset, and it exists primarily not to make money, not to be the social media future, but to influence political outcomes in the United States and elsewhere. That's the theory. That's the argument, that it is directly China's action to be involved in our democracy in ways that are counterproductive. So that's what they're the people who are opposed to TikTok are are saying, at least at this congression, at this congressional level. You know, and that does remind us of the global issue, and it is so heartbreaking that we still have to talk about what Israel continues to do in Gaza. And it's been interesting to see a transition from the Biden team around how they've been approaching this. They're now leaning in very hard and are beginning to take a counter approach to what Israel is doing, especially what Benjamin Netanyahu goes by Bibi, what Netanyahu is up to, because what has seemed like a unshakable bond between the United States and Israel's security seems now to have run its course. And the fact that there's headlines and public outings that have the Prime Minister of Israel and the President of the United States clashing with each other in public spaces, I think is a good thing, because the United States cannot continue to give just blanket support to the actions of Israel. They have shown themselves to not be trustworthy with that kind of support. And what they continue to do in this, what I think is just an unreasonable attempt to try to drown out every single person connected to Hamas in Gaza, is totally and completely unreasonable and immoral. And they continue. So I'm glad to see Biden get around on this one. I know people are going to say that they're only doing it because of political issues, but I think it runs much deeper than that. I think there's all kinds of reasons why the Biden administration is not going to continue to put up with what Israel's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And frankly, if the president and his administration are bowing a bit or bending a bit because of political pressure from the Ceasefire Now folks, from the, you know, percentages that are voting for uncommitted in the Democratic primary, excellent. Like that's people exercising their rights to, you know, redress their grievances and pressure the government to do what they want. Like, fantastic. Like, that's good. I'm glad to hear him listening. I wish that wasn't necessary, but because he led on this from the beginning, But short of that, like this is, you know, this is a much better situation. This is a much better position for him to be in than unqualified support for Israel without any concern for what they do or who it affects or who they kill and all of that. So I'm like, yeah, is it too little too late? I don't know. It might maybe. Do I wish this had happened months ago? Absolutely.
Right.
But I'm glad it's happening now.
Yeah. And I get the sense that behind the scenes, the Biden administration had been working to pull the reins in, playing nice, doing the usual things, you know, back channels, hey, cut this out. And that didn't work. And so then they had to go public. Then they had to try some new tactics, inviting not Benjamin Netanyahu, but his political rival to have talks, which sent a clear signal that, hey, we're not a fan of what you're doing here. And then just, you know, the leaked, you know, comments from Biden, like this guy's been a real a-hole to deal with.
Yeah. Or at the State of the Union where he was caught on a hot mic saying to a senator that, you know, Netanyahu was going to have a come to Jesus meeting, which, you know, I don't know how appropriate that is in terms of terminology.
To the Jewish minister, you mean? That's probably
exactly. Yeah. So part of me wonders, you know, and then someone says, oh, Mr. President, you're on a hot mic. And he's like, oh, part of me wonders like if that wasn't intentional, like,
yeah,
to try to send a message both to supporters who have been not happy with his position on Israel, as well as a message to Netanyahu, you know, that like, so I wonder if that was actually intentional to try to communicate, hey, there's going to be some movement here. Don't be surprised if we change positions on this.
Yeah.
And look, the response from the spokespeople for Benjamin Netanyahu is that the Biden administration is seeking to undermine the Netanyahu government. Okay, so a lot going on there, right? Similar to, you know, the conversation we were just having about China's influence in the United States. This is one of the things that global powers do. They influence the viability of other governments. This is constant and going on all the time. And I know for a lot of people, if they don't follow this closely, they just recognize the United States of America supports Israel, and it feels like it's blanket. But the animosity between the Biden administration and the Netanyahu government has been serious. They do not like each other. They do not trust each other. And only the murderous acts from Hamas and the capturing of these hostages who are still being held is what puts some of that on the back burner. And now that's moving back to the forefront. So the disregard that these two men have for each other and that these two governments have for each other is significant in the context of the United States supports Israel. But this particular government that Netanyahu has put together to keep him back in power so that he doesn't go to jail when he's out of office. He's faced the very same thing that Donald Trump is facing, where he's been charged with crimes. He's going to be convicted of those crimes. The only thing keeping him out of jail is that he's currently the functioning prime minister of Israel. And when he's done with that, he is likely going to jail. So there are so many factors going on here. And people think that the Biden administration is just all in with Netanyahu. They are not, and never have been, and have never wanted Netanyahu to be the leader of Israel. So there's a lot that goes on inside of these long-term international negotiations and power situations. And unfortunately, the innocent people in Gaza, the tens of thousands of people who have been killed and the hundreds of thousands of people who have been displaced are paying the price for all of this across the board. And the United States not doing anything about Hamas overall, even with the Abraham Accords that the Trump administration was so proud of. This is the situation that we find ourselves in after their 4 years of their nonsense.
And just a little breaking news parenthesis here. The House has passed the bill banning TikTok. 352 votes to 65. 197 Republicans voting yes, 155 Democrats voting yes. So by a wide margin.
Wow.
What's anything? Does it characterize the people who voted no? Who are the people that, that want to be sure?
I just saw in the very quick checking that I did on Twitter, I saw two congresspeople tweeting that they had voted no. One was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the other was Dean Phillips.
Wow. Okay. Interesting to find out what their takes are on that. Because this is, now, I know we say that Congress is so torn and so partisan and they never get along. They actually pass a lot of bills with numbers like this. I mean, most bills that pass like this, and they're not important, and they're just kind of the functioning of the government. But on a hot take issue like this, to have this kind of bipartisan support, that's a big deal. So we'll see. There might, I mean, if you've been dreaming about making a bunch of money on your TikTok dance, I would say get to dancing, because the Senate could slow roll this thing too, or they could just, you know, it could pass in a flash and that's that. If it even comes up for vote, I don't know. Maybe they have a way to sort of pause it out. But in perhaps the most, you know, scary news of the future. Look at the center of faith, hope, and love. We don't like to scare people around here. That's not. I don't think it works. We think there's a lot of scary things and organizations you can be involved with. Should encourage you to respond to fear with some better responses than just, you know, reacting and being terrified. But apparently we've decided to bring the woolly mammoth back, and they have DNA. They have DNA from the woolly mammoth, and they've decided to full Jurassic Park this thing. So I don't know if you guys have kept up on that big science news, but Newsweek has an article that the woolly mammoth is going to be, I don't know, somehow remade in a test tube somewhere. Which I'm sure not in Alabama. I'm sure they'll find a way to put a stop to that in Alabama.
IVF for woolly mammoths.
But the technology has moved to such a pace where we can now have a woolly mammoth rolling around the earth. So
we learned nothing from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, nothing. Obviously we don't have a woolly mammoth rolling around yet. You have this crazy winter, right? Super hot. In 3 weeks, the sun is going to disappear in the middle of the day in a great solar eclipse, for which some people have no consideration or care. Others of us are going to drive to places to be spiritually enlightened. I think back to the time in human history when these things are happening, when global trends of weather are shifting, when eclipse take place and no one knows they're coming. It's just
terrifying.
It just goes dark. You know, when the sky feels like it's turning red and you know, the gods are on the move. All of those things are happening. At least now we have a little bit more scientific knowledge. And I'll use that as a little plug that if you're interested in joining us to experience the eclipse together, we're going to be in Eagle Pass, Texas, which is just west of San Antonio. So if you can get yourself to San Antonio, we'll pick you up at the airport and bring you out to Eagle Pass for 2 days with astrophysicist Paul Wallace, our buddy around here, we'll be talking with tomorrow. Have a chance to experience the eclipse together. So you can go to votecommongood.com and do that. And then if you want to stick around and go for a border experience, we will be going into the towns of Laredo and Eagle Pass and Del Rio and finding out what's really going on at the border and having some border experiences. So and then we're doing the same thing in Arizona, not an eclipse, but a border experience. And we're going to be meeting with some candidates and doing some other work in Arizona in April. So if you're up for joining the Vote Common Good crowd and you want to be inspired and hope-filled, we'd love to have you do it.
Yeah, so, and you can get this kind of conversation, you know, live and in person.
That's true. That's true. Whether you I mean, you have to know it's different when you're at home and or on the toilet or wherever you watch this, and you can just pause it or stop it or scrub forward
mute
if it's already
it.
Been mute it.
Imagine yeah, being trapped in a box with us for hours on end. No, we drive ourselves out. Crazy.
Yeah. No getting out. It's just full on. It's just full on exhausting. But we would love to have you. And if you're a regular podcast listener, Rob was on a podcast with Rob. Tell us about the Atheist podcast you were on. That was the highest downloaded episode.
Yeah, I did. I had the opportunity to be a guest on the Freedom from Religion Foundation podcast, Ask an Atheist, where, I mean, interestingly named because I don't consider myself an atheist. And I think it was the atheist asking the questions. oddly named show, but I had a great time, great conversation. And talking about evangelical support of Donald Trump and understanding that. And great conversation. Yeah, you can search it up, as Whimsy would say, because she doesn't say Google. Search it up and find the Ask an Atheist podcast. And it's on YouTube. It's on all the places where you can listen to podcasts.
All the places. And I was on the Chris Hayes podcast yesterday, the one that dropped yesterday, recorded a week or two ago. And that one went very well. So if you just want more of us in your ear, go to Ask an Atheist. Whoopie that one up. And Chris Hayes. Podcast from MSNBC.
I know we're winding down and I have another meeting in 2 minutes that I need to be at. Listen, if they're putting out a story that they're going to genetically engineer a new woolly mammoth, it's already happened. They've already done it.
There's probably a few roaming around a pen somewhere, right?
Right. Huh.
I don't know. That Dolly the cow thing that they did, I feel like that was a one-off.
Sheep?
Yeah. That's what they want you to think.
Maybe. It doesn't feel like the geneticists are lying.
I see a lot of sheep that look very similar is all I'm saying.
Can't tell one sheep from the other. The sheep may know my voice, but I don't know theirs. So I can't figure out how that works. All right. So, that's probably good for today. I'm going to be away in Mexico on vacation next week because, hey, here's the thing. You can just go right into Mexico if you're an American and then just come right home. Nobody even stops you. Open borders, apparently, in Mexico. And it's a country. Works out great for people. You go in, you do your business, you come out. That's that. So I'm going to be doing that next week, not for the work that we're doing for the border experience. That's in April. This is just,
sitting on the beach,
sitting at the beach. So I'll be away for a week or so. But other good things we keep rolling here in the channel. So keep up with us and be sure to hop over and follow us on TikTok before it goes away because that's barely going to happen now. All right, is that good?
Yep.
Thanks everybody.
That's good.
Chat, Peggy Yabitz, Daryl.
Darlene,
like there's some new ones.
Oh, we had the uneven
Nancy
Carp or three.
Alex,
Rain, Michelle. Bill. Appreciate all of you.
Antonia,
share with family and friends. You know, nothing says I love you like sending somebody a live stream or podcast they don't want to listen.
Rain, Bill, Michelle. Yeah, we had some new people in the chat. Great to see y'all.
Yeah,
good. And we'll see you next time.
Okay, bye now.